favorite songs. Good morning. Good morning to Trinity Baptist Church. It is good to be with y'all today. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited about what y'all have going on, the Super September. I want you to know something. I'm glad I'm speaking first. I have seen the lineup of the people that are coming behind me. I got to be honest, I don't want to follow any of those guys. So thank you for inviting me to come first and get to share with you guys on this Sunday morning. I would love for y'all to have met my wife. My wife is Elizabeth, and she normally travels with me to all the churches that I go to. But she couldn't be here this morning because she ran off to Colorado to visit my daughter. So she says hello, and she is praying for you this morning and praying for me as we worship together and talk about God's ministries and what you're doing and how he's accomplishing what he's accomplishing through you and through your obedience. I want to say again, first of all, thank you very much. I am not unaware, I'm very aware, that I'm standing in front of people who have been extremely faithful to the Baptist Children's Village, very much in support of us. All that we do, I tell people all the time when they say, hey, we appreciate what you do, we support what you do, I want you to understand this. We don't do anything without you. We don't do anything without you. And anytime you hear me speak about the Baptist Children's Village, what you're going to hear me talk about is your ministry. You see, I need you to understand something. I need you to understand that I understand that this ministry does not belong to me. This ministry belongs to the Baptist churches in Mississippi. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. I want you to get to know your ministry. I want you to get to know what's going on at the Baptist Children's Village. I want you to get to know me. I am the 11th executive director of the Baptist Children's Village. I'm number 11. Before I became the executive director of your Baptist Children's Village, I was a practicing attorney. I had my own law firm. I was a litigator around the state of Mississippi. So we'll get the confessions out of the way on the front end. I will confess to you that I am a recovering attorney. And I know that you're gracious and forgiving, so I can be here. I can be here today. But I had my own law firm, and the Lord blessed my practice, and I was very fortunate with the blessings that he gave me. There's something else I want you to know about me. I hold the record for living at your Baptist Children's Village longer than any child in its history. I am a resident. I am an alumnus of the Baptist Children's Village. I hold the record 18 years. I went to your Baptist Children's Village and when I was 5 years old, and I left 18 years later when I graduated from Mississippi College. Now, there were 5 Milner children that went through the Baptist Children's Village. I had 3 brothers and 1 sister. And the brother just older than me, we're 11 months apart. He's 11 months older than I am. He wants you to know why I hold the record over him. You see, he's a big guy. He went to Mississippi College, but he went on a football scholarship. And, don't tell him this. He lives in Alabama, so I know I don't hear. But, yeah, I'm still a little intimidated by him. He's a big guy. He's a powerful guy. And he wants you to know why I hold the record over him by 1 year. You see, if you do that math, I came when I was 5, and I left 18 years later when I graduated from Mississippi College. If you do the math on there, what you're going to find out is there's too many years in there. That math only works if you flunk the 3rd grade and the 7th grade. My brother wants you to know that I flunked the 3rd and the 7th grade. He wants you to know that. Somehow that makes him feel better about the fact that I hold the record over him. I don't know why. He's a small person. But we won't talk about him. Why do I want you to know that I flunked the 3rd and the 7th grade? You see, I want you to know that because of this. We stand and we worship a God, and you're acting in obedience to a God that knows how to take failure and turn it into something beautiful. You may be here this morning, and you may be struggling. You may be dealing with some failures. You may be dealing with some hard times. I want you to know that we serve a God who has a habit. If you'll give those to him, he'll turn it into something beautiful and something meaningful. You know, I grew up at your Baptist Children's Village, and the house parents would read the Bible to us, and we would go to churches. And one of their favorite verses was Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and hope. I got to be honest with you. When I was young, I didn't buy any of that. You see, I was struggling with, wait a minute, if God is all-powerful, and if God has a plan for my life, God, I don't think you know what you're doing. I don't think you're paying attention to me. If this is your plan for my life, I don't think that you love me. You may be here this morning, and you may be dealing with some very difficult times, some real suffering, maybe some losses, maybe something's going on in your life, and you're wondering, where are you, God? Where are you, God? If you love me, why aren't you here? Why aren't you here? And I want you to know that I struggle with that. I wouldn't buy in any of it. Because you see, my life and my plan and my road didn't look good. My father was a habitual criminal. He would get put in prison in one state, and then when he would get out, he would just move his family across the country. That's why my oldest brother, Bruce, was born in Pensacola, Florida, and my youngest brother, James, was born in Sacramento, California. When my youngest brother was 5 days old, I was 3 years old at the time. I do not remember this event. My mother told me about the event, and I don't remember it. But my father took us to a park one day in Sacramento, California, and set us on a park bench. My youngest brother was 5 days old. My father left to go get lunch, and he never came back. He didn't tell my mother that he had checked her out of the hotel. He didn't tell her that she didn't have a car or any money or anything like that. He just left, and she had five children. My oldest brother, Bruce, remembers the event very well, and we talk about it often. My mother, who was a habitual alcoholic, she was a bad alcoholic, but she was able to beg and get charity to get her family back to her hometown, Claiborne, down in Claiborne County, Mississippi, Port Gibson, which is where her family was from. We lived there for another 2 years, and this event I do remember. When I was 5 years old, and I want you to know this, church, I had my mother until I was a sophomore in college. Because of the Baptist Children's Village, I had a close relationship with my mother until I was a sophomore in college when the alcoholism finally took her life and she died of cirrhosis of the liver. But there was a day when I was 5 years old down in Claiborne County, Mississippi, when the shame of her decisions, her suffering, everything that she had done and where she was in life got to be too big for her. And she screamed out for help one more time by pulling a trigger. I can remember going onto the back porch. I can remember me and my older brothers and sisters pulling her back into the house. And my oldest brother, Bruce, ran 2 miles to the nearest house that had a telephone. I can remember those things. Wait a minute, God, if you love me, if you're all-knowing and if you're all-powerful, why am I sitting here on this kitchen floor? One of my dearest friends in all the world, his name is David. David and I grew up together at the Baptist Children's Village. David came when he was 5 years old, too. His first recollection of his parents is that they were shooting at one another through a car he was sitting in. David came to your Baptist Children's Village when he was 5. He and I lived in the same cottage. We became best friends. And we had a saying at your Baptist Children's Village, and that saying was, home for good, home for good, home for good. This summer, I'm going to go home for good. And what home for good meant to a village kid, and that's how we refer to one another, and we still get together, we still call each other village kids, I call my children village kids, it's a term of endearment for us. But what that meant to a village kid was that your parents were going to reconcile, things were going to be good, and you were going to get to go home with them and live with them like all the other little boys and girls. Well, David went home for good when he was 8 years old. David's home for good only lasted until he was 13, when he was sitting in a social worker's office because the state of Mississippi had to remove him for his own safety. His mother had broken his arm. And he sat there and the social worker said, who are your grandparents? And he said, I don't have any grandparents. Well, who are your aunts and uncles? You got to have somebody. And he has to explain to her, lady, you don't understand something. I don't have anybody. Where are you, God? Why do you allow these things to happen? You may be here today and you may be wondering those things. And it can be very difficult to see the hand of God when you're in the middle of the hard time or you're in the middle of the suffering. And that's where faith comes in. He's there. I want to make that point. You see, my story didn't end on that kitchen floor in Port Gibson, Mississippi. But more importantly, my story did not begin there either. You see, God has always had a plan for the widows and the orphans, all the way back in the Old Testament. You know, at the Children's Village, We played church league basketball, church league softball. We played all of the church league sports. And it was a lot of fun. And we had our own team. And we had our own cheer. And they would put us on a bus. And we would go to Broadmoor Baptist. Or we would go to this Baptist church. And we would play this game. And we had our own cheer. And our own cheer went something like this. We are the orphans, the mighty, mighty orphans. Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are. So we tell them, we are the orphans, the mighty, mighty orphans. And the bus driver and the house parents on the bus, they would kind of react to that cheer, something like you're reacting to that cheer, which is, oh, please stop doing that. Which, of course, did what? We shouted it even louder. We would hang out the window screaming this cheer. But I got to thinking about it one time, and I thought, you know, I'm not an orphan. I got a dad. I don't know where he is, but I've got a dad. I've got a mom. She's an alcoholic, but I've got a mom. I'm not an orphan. Then I realized this. If you look in the Old Testament and you actually study orphans in the Bible, this is what you find. You find that the Hebrew word there in the Old Testament is yathom. And yathom does not mean both parents are dead. Yathom means fatherless, one without a guide, one without somebody to teach them the way. That's what orphan meant. In the New Testament, it means the uncomforted, those without a comforter, those without a provider. That's what orphan means. And if you look at it with that, that starts describing our kids very, very well. And in the Old Testament, God used that word 16 times to instruct his children on how to treat orphans. Four times he used it to say what he would do is if you mistreat orphans. James 1:27 makes it clear, religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this: take care of orphans and widows in their affliction, and keep yourself unstained from the world. You can say, well, see, that's good for the Old Testament and way back then, but what about now? Listen, I want you to know, mine and David's story started 72 years before we were even born, because it was in the early 1890s that God came to the Mississippi Baptist Convention and he said, I want you to create an orphanage. I want you to create a home for children who don't have parents, or that do have parents that aren't being parents, that don't have the guide. And so that cause was championed in 1893 by a pastor from First Baptist Church of Senatobia, Mississippi. His name was the Reverend L.S. Foster. And this is what he wrote in the Baptist Record. If this thought is of God, he will put it into the heart of some person to send a contribution for the cause. In December of that same year, a Baptist lady from Tillatobia, Mississippi, Miss Lou H. Moore, she responded with this: with my prayers, I enclose this dollar for the institution. If it finds company enough to affect a movement, you will hear from me again. Church, I want you to know that on May the 12th of 1897, you received your first child at what was then known as the Baptist Orphanage in 1897. I want to put that into a little historical context for you. You received your first child on May the 12th of 1897. Senatobia, Mississippi did not receive its first phone system until 1898. You started this ministry without a phone, without a fax, without iCloud, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, PowerPoint, or any of those other things that sometimes we think we've got to have to do God's work. What you had was an obedient heart, and you were submissive to God. And you opened on 1897 the Baptist Orphanage, which is now known as the Baptist Children's Village. I want you to know what you've been doing for the past 122 years. Here is your plan. You know, when I practiced law, one of the things I did, I represented a lot of businesses. And people would come and they would bring me their business plan. And I would look at that business plan. And I would say, well, I think this is a good idea. I think this is a bad idea. Or sometimes I just have to tell them, look, you really don't need to spend your money here. You need to close this. I want you to know what your business plan through the Baptist Children's Village is. Here it is. You seek out devastation. You seek out these social workers' offices, these kitchen floors, and these park benches. And then you step in with the love of Christ, and this is what you say: because of Christ's love for you and my obedience to him, I'm here to help carry your burden. I'm here to take your burden from you, help you, put you back together in his love. And because of the cooperative effort throughout this state, this is not going to cost you anything. that is your business plan. When I was looking at this, and to be quite honest with you, I'd already accepted the job, and I got to looking at the budget and how everything worked and all of that. I told my wife, I said, sweetheart, this ain't going to work. I mean, this is not a plan that makes money, this ain't going to work. She said, Sam, you better pray about it. I said, I will, and so I did. You know what God told me? He said, Sam, I've been doing this 122 years without you. Why don't you just do what I tell you to do? And I said, yes, Lord, and I learned a lesson. This only works in the economy of God because of the faithfulness of His people. You know, when we go out and we look for these park benches and things, have you ever noticed this? Have you ever noticed that absolute need is never attractive? The situation and the circumstances are always bad. There's always turmoil. There's always things that are unattractive. Things that make us very uncomfortable. That's absolute need. And the children that we minister to and the families that we minister to, understand this, they're in absolute need. And I think about this and how God must have seen us on earth when we were nothing but absolute need. Sinners. And He looked down and He said this, I love you, and I love you so much, I'm going to send my own Son to die just for you. We do the same thing. Because of your obedience, we're able to do that. But that's what we do. We want to go out to these children and families. You know, when I became the executive director, one thing I wanted to know is how many children have gone through the doors of your ministry. Now, this was 2 years ago. Okay, you'd been operating for 120 years. And they came back with me with a very impressive figure. And I said, look, now I'm a jaded old litigator. I need a number that I can prove without explanation. So go back and get me a more conservative number. The most conservative number of the children that have gone through the doors of the Baptist Children's Village in 120 years is 8,000. 8,000 children. Now, if that doesn't sound like a lot in 120 years, I want you to think about it this way. That is 67 new children every single year for 120 years. Not those that stayed like me for 18 years. New children. 67 of them every single year. If that doesn't sound like a lot, I want you to think about it like this. That's their families also. And if that doesn't sound like a lot, I want you to think about this, because I think about this often. All of us were going to grow up anyway. And we were probably going to have our own children. In the Milner family, there are 16 grandchildren. None of those are mine, which causes a real problem for me when we get together. Because that knucklehead brother I'm telling you about, he's got his first granddaughter, and she's beautiful. I'll give him that. But I get pictures of this kid every week. And I'm having a swipe right, you know. Look at this. But I digress. But 16 to the Milner family alone, multiply that times 8,000. And you begin to see what the economy of God, through the obedience of His people, and how it begins to change the world. You have children right now who are filling pulpits that went through your Baptist Children's Village. You have children right now who are on the mission field, Christian businessmen and Christian businesswomen, doctors, school teachers, deacons in churches, all because of the ministry of the Baptist Children's Village. You know, one of the things I wondered sometimes was, why in the world did Satan attack my family? Because I want you to know this. I was close to my mom. We had discussions about faith. I know she was a believer. And so I wanted to know, why would Satan attack my family? He couldn't get my mom. And then it dawned on me. He knew he couldn't get my mom. But I'll bet those five kids look like low-hanging fruit to him. And if he could get them to doubt God's goodness because of some hard times. And young people, hear me. There's a lot going on in the world today. And a lot want to get to you. And they want to argue that God is not good. That God is not all-powerful. It's all a lie. It's not a new conversation. It's been going on since the beginning of time. God is good. Why am I going through this? And I don't understand it. But God had a plan. He had a plan. and it worked through your obedience at the Baptist Children's Village. I'm asked often, how is all of this paid for, Sean? How is this done? I'll tell you. First of all, you need to understand this. All of the money that comes to the Baptist Children's Village comes through the Mississippi Baptist Convention, Baptist churches just like this one that are so faithful, and private individuals who give us money. What you will notice I didn't say was any money from the state or the federal government. Your Baptist Children's Village receives no money from the state or federal government. I need to explain this to you because you need to understand this. Your Baptist Children's Village is licensed through the Department of Child Protective Services. We are licensed by them. And when you are licensed and they give you children, there's what's known as a board payment that comes with those children. There are a lot of child care agencies out there, and they receive those board payments when they receive children. Hear me, church, because there's some misunderstanding here. What we do is we accept the children from the state, but we tell them to keep the check. We don't want their money. We have a good relationship with the state of Mississippi. Jess Dickinson's a Baptist boy from Rankin County. He's the head of CPS. And he asks me, and other people ask me all the time, Sean, why are you licensed? Isn't it a bigger headache? Because you've got to understand, this is a voluntary license. We don't have to be licensed to operate. We don't. But we choose to be. And so I'm asked all the time, why do you choose to be licensed? Isn't it a bigger headache? And yes, it is. It's a lot bigger headache. You're licensed by the state of Mississippi for one reason and one reason only. Hear this. You're licensed by the state of Mississippi because the state of Mississippi takes children into their custody that need to hear the gospel of Christ, and I have absolutely no confidence in the state or any other agency in the state to do it. That's why you're licensed by the state. So then I'm asked, well, if you're licensed by the state and you serve their children, why don't you take the money? Wouldn't it be a lot easier if you took the money? Oh, yeah, it'd be a whole lot easier. For somebody that checks the mail every day, it'd be a whole lot easier. There are two reasons you don't take the money from the state or the federal government. Number one, God didn't tell the state to take care of the children. He told us to. Number two, we're never going to subordinate the gospel message of Christ to any state or federal dollar or department. We're not going to do it. So I meet with them often, and I get asked these questions often. And then every once in a while, they'll say, oh, we need you to do this. And I'll say, no, I'm not doing that. And I don't depend on their money. Because of your obedience, I can make those stands. Now, let me be clear. The state, because there's some misunderstanding about this, the state of Mississippi has never asked us not to take a child to church, tried to tell us where to take that child to church, or anything like that. They've never done that. Like I said, we have a good relationship with the state. Where are you around the state of Mississippi? You have seven campuses around the state. Up in Independence, Mississippi, Water Valley, Mississippi. Anybody know where Nanaway is? I've been there four times. I still can't get there. I'll tell you this, it's near Louisville, Mississippi. But I ended up pulling on the side of the road and calling them, and they come get me, and I follow them in. You have a home down in Star, Mississippi, Brookhaven, Mississippi, Waynesboro, Mississippi, and down on the coast in Wiggins, Mississippi. On each one of those campuses, you have at least two houses. Some have more, but you have at least two, one for boys and one for girls. And inside each one of those houses, you have what's known as house parents. Understand this, church. The house parents are the heroes of the Baptist Children's Village. They are your missionaries. When I came to the Baptist Children's Village, I wanted them to be acknowledged for the missionaries that they are. Your house parents have now all been commissioned as Mississippi Baptist Home missionaries. You may have somebody, you may know somebody who's thinking about home missions. They want to do missions. They love children, but they can't go to Africa and they can't go to these other places. Tell them about the Baptist Children's Village. We'll take them in. They'll be Baptist Mississippi Baptist Home missionaries. I talk to our house parents all the time and I say, listen, what is it you want me to tell people about being a house parent? Two things, very closely related. Number one, they all tell me to tell you this, that they get paid. I said, what? They said, yeah, tell everybody we get paid. Our friends think we do this for free. I said, okay, I'll tell them that. What's number two? They said, number two is tell them it's a calling. Don't come looking for a job. Those are the two things from house parents. Your house parents are so special. I'll tell you what they do. They sit on the bed with the child who's been turned down for the fourth adoptive placement. Four times she's been told, we don't want you. We can tell that kid all we want to that this just wasn't the right match, but what did she hear at 9 years old? What she heard was, nobody wants me. A house parent is a person that sits on the bed with her and holds her and explains to her, no, the creator of this entire universe loves you so much that he sent his son down here to die just for you. That's a house parent. House parent is a person, and this actually happened a few years ago. Lady, one of our house parents takes her kids to the grocery store to go grocery shopping, just like you take your kids to the grocery. She's trying to herd the cats and scream and holler and pulling on collars and all of that. She looks over and she sees a woman sitting in her car crying, and there's some kids sitting on her car. She doesn't walk on the other side of the road. She knows what this scene is. She doesn't walk on the other side of the road. She walks over to the car and she knocks on the window. The lady rolls the window down. Your house parent looks at her and says, may I help you? This lady looks at her with tears in her eyes and said, no, you can't help me. My husband has left us. All I've got is this car. We have no money, and I just ran out of gas. You can't help me. Your house parent looked her back in the face and said, oh, yes, ma'am. I work for the Baptist Children's Village. I can help you. Within 2 hours, we had those kids in one of our campus. Mom went to see where her kids would be living. We had that family for 18 months while we got Mom back on her feet, and she got training, and she got a job. And we were able to put that family back together in 18 months. That's what you do. That's what a house parent does. The Baptist Children's Village also offers opportunities for missions. One of my biggest privileges, and I've never told this story in a church like this, but I'm going to do it this morning. One of my biggest blessings in my life, the Baptist Children's Village had what's known as a visiting family ministry. And when I was 8 years old, there was a family who said, hey, I want to take a kid for Christmas. And that family's name was Dick and Jerry Caraway. And they took me in for Christmas. And I experienced things like I'd never experienced. I'd experienced family. And I experienced how a Christian man treats his wife. And it didn't end when I was 8. They kept coming to get me, and they would take me on these incredible vacations and these incredible things, and they just kept pouring into me and pouring into me. And one of the things they poured into me was their family and their extended family. And I got to see how extended family got together and how they had meals together and how they did that. And I got to meet Aunt Carol, and Aunt Carol is here this morning. She's sitting here, and she didn't know I was going to do this, but she's sitting there, and I can't not do it because of the impact that this family, Carol Byram and John Byram, had on my life. I call them Aunt Carol and Uncle John. We still cook Uncle John's crawfish etouffee at my house, and that's the title of it, is Uncle John's crawfish etouffee. They were just being nice and being the generous people they are. I don't think they understood the depth of the impact of what they had on me. And because they had that on me, on my children, and on my nieces and my nephews, the opportunity for mission. You have also the Dorcas program that goes through the Delta and across the north part of the state. I'm sorry, Aunt Carol. That goes across the north part of the state, where you send case managers into homes to try to hold that family together so they don't have to be disrupted. And we work with them and try to hold those families together, because you see, the Baptist Children's Village understands this. The first ordained institution on this planet was the family, not the children's home. The family, the marriage, is the representation of the relationship between Christ and His church. We work to put that back together. That's what we want to do. You see, my challenge against God when I was looking at my hard time is I was looking at through my eyes and what I wanted. I didn't want to stop and take the time to think God may have a plan for me. And you may be suffering with some hard things right now, and understand this. You can't see it, but God has a plan. I'm asked often, hey, are you trying to say, saying that it was God's will for your life that you had to grow up in a children's home? Is that what you're telling me? I'll tell you this. There's an answer to that, and I can answer it theologically all day long, but I'll tell you this. Had I not been there, I would not be here. God has a way of taking failure and suffering and hurt, and then He says, give it to me. You may be here today, and this is what you need to hear. God's asking you, give it to me, and let me show you what I can do with it. My buddy David sat in that social worker's office. He kept telling her he didn't have anybody. And then he remembered and he told her, you know, I grew up at the Baptist Children's Village one time. The lady picked up the phone and she called the village because they know us. And back then was the executive director's name was Paul Nunnery. And he was a tall, impressive, powerful, booming voice man. He was also a recovering attorney from the Delta, by the way. And so he had a booming voice. And David said, I could hear Paul's voice on the other end of that line. And this social worker said to him, I got a kid here named David. He said he used to live with y'all. I need to know, do you want him? David said, I heard Paul's voice come across that line. Paul said, well, are you going to bring him to me? Or do I need to come and get him? David came back to the Baptist Children's Village when he was 13 years old. He and I became instant friends again. But when David came back, he had just been passed through school. He wasn't going to graduate from high school. The village already made the decision. Even though he's only 13, he's never going to make it through high school. So we got to come up with a different plan for David. But the summer after David came back to the village, he got saved. It was a house parent that shared the gospel of Christ with him. David started doing better in school. You had a home in New Albany, Mississippi. David and I moved to New Albany, Mississippi. I went up a little before him. When David came up, I'm walking him in downtown New Albany, introducing him to kids his age. We hang out with some of them. On our way home, David looks at me and he says, Sing, that's the prettiest girl I ever met in my life. I said, David, that girl's daddy owns that bank right there. You better let that girl alone. David said, Sing, I'm going to marry that girl. I said, David, come on, man. These people are nice to us up here. We've got a nice thing. Don't mess this up for us. He said, Sing, I'm going to marry her. David did graduate from high school. He graduated Mr. W.P. Daniel High School. Martha was her name. She graduated Mrs. W.P. Daniel High School. David went on to graduate from college the same year his oldest son graduated from high school. He graduated from Blue Mountain College. This past summer, he and Martha celebrated 28 years of marriage. They have three beautiful children. One of them's already graduated from Ole Miss. The other two are at Ole Miss right now. That's all I'm going to say about that. David's owned two businesses. He's very successful, speaks for the Baptist Children's Village and gives his testimony anytime I ask him. And the kid who wasn't going to graduate from high school, he serves on the Board of Education for the city of New Albany right now. Give it to God. Give your suffering, give your loss, give whatever it is to God. And watch Him make something beautiful. You may be here this morning, and maybe you don't know God. Maybe you want to come talk to the pastor this morning and find out, who is this Jesus? Because I want you to know something, church. I tell people all the time, especially, I'm going to Washington next Sunday. Y'all be in prayer for me. I'm going to go up there. I'm sure they're waiting to hear from me. They're not. But I have to tell them this. When you ask me what the answer is, I wanted to tell you, Jesus is not an answer. He is not a good idea. What I'm telling you is, Jesus is the only answer. What do? We share the gospel of Christ with at-risk children and families around the state of Mississippi. How do we do it? You provide clothes. You provide safe homes. You provide house parents. You provide churches. You provide education. You provide health care. That's how. You see, a kid can't hear if he's hungry, and he can't see if he's afraid. That's what you do through your ministry. Thank you so much for supporting us. And please, if you have questions about Christ, if you're wondering about Him in your life, come see the pastor and let Him take your brokenness and your failure and turn it into something more beautiful than you can ever imagine. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for our time together. Thank you for this church. Lord, thank you for obedience. Thank you for their obedience. All in the monotony, the business meetings they have to have, the deacons' meetings, everything they do that nobody sees. Father, thank you for their obedience to do that. And let them know this morning that all of the actions in the unseen places have eternal impacts on lives of children and families around this state that they'll never know this side of heaven. Please give them that glimpse. It's in Christ's name I pray.
Amen.
We're going to have a time of invitation. I simply want to invite you to take your brokenness. I don't know what brokenness you have today, but I know you have it. I want you to take that brokenness and bring it to Jesus. I invite you to stand. I invite you to come. An honor to just hear what the Lord has done in your life and what God is doing through the Baptist Children's Village. We can take something broken and just make something so beautiful. So thank you for coming. If y'all would just give him a hand for sharing his story. And we're an honor to be a part of that. At this point, I want to hear from our Sunday school report. If you would make your way. And then after our Sunday school report, we have a report from the search committee.
Good morning. It's the first Sunday of the quarter, and here I am again. I'm glad to see all of you here today, and if you didn't make it to Sunday school today, I hope you can next week. We're beginning our study of Ephesians, the letter of Paul to the Ephesians. We've studied his letters to Timothy and Titus, and now we're studying his letter to the church at Ephesus. We've only had one lesson, so you can get in right on the ground floor. Today in Sunday school, we had 96 members and 5 visitors for a total of 101.
On behalf of the Pastor Search Committee, for the ones that don't know, I'd like to let everyone know who the search committee is. Patty Beard, Billy Bratcher, James Edwards, Martha Hollowell, and myself. We'd like to let y'all know next Sunday morning we will be passing out a questionnaire to the church asking for your ideals and your wants, and we'd like for you to pick it up next Sunday and bring it back the following Sunday. As soon as we get the questionnaires back and we compile the information, we'll start asking for resumes.
All right, there's no evening service tonight. I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your Labor Day weekend. There's no choir practice, but we will resume our regular Sunday evening services next week. Don't miss out on Wednesday night prayer meeting. That's one thing that I've been really hoping I could see a lot more of. I've been seeing so many more students come in on Wednesday nights, but I'd like to see more of you at the prayer meeting. If you feel like your prayer life is missing just a little bit, please come to prayer meeting. It's a wonderful time to be with your church family on Wednesday nights in the middle of the week. Let's all stand together and sing our parting song, I've Got Peace Like a River.